Good morning. Welcome to Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Ty Bannerman. Yesterday was the first day of spring, and all over the state, farmers and gardeners are starting a new growing season. Today, we are looking at how farmers are bringing traditional agricultural practices into their fields. We will explore what we can learn from past generations about sustainability. Irrigation techniques, crop planting strategies, and pest control are just some of the things we're going to be talking about. And we will find out about local programs that support this kind of work. We want to hear from you. Are you a small farmer or home gardener? What sort of tips do you have to share with aspiring growers? Does your family use heirloom seeds? How did your grandparents teach you to grow food? Call 277-5866. That's 277-5866. Or email us at letstalk@kunm.org. Our first guest today is Jedrick Lamb of Bernalillo County's Grow the Grower program, which offers a comprehensive training, education, and business program for new farmers. Hi, Jedrick.
Good morning.
So your program teaches young people the basics of becoming a farmer. What kind of students are interested in what you have to offer?
It's a wide variety of individuals from all ages and all areas of the state. We are focusing on those that are interested in creating their own agricultural operation as a business to utilize county open space properties to start their own farm.
And why did Bernalillo County consider this a worthwhile program to invest in?
Yes, it's really a beautiful thing. So in 2014, there was a mill levy that was voted on by the voters of Bernalillo County that increased property taxes to support this program, amongst others, and that the constituents had clearly stated that it's important to conserve agricultural land and the water tied to it and to put that into production of food to address food security in our own communities.
So tell me about the traditional techniques that your students learn about.
We are using a hybrid of traditional techniques with modern technologies. So trying to minimize tilling, really allow soil health to build through cover cropping, introducing beneficial insects, utilizing heritage seeds, and trying to be as least invasive as possible to the natural system to allow the microbes, the fungi, the insects, the plants to do what they have been doing for a very long time, and how us as farmers can help provide the best home possible for them to do their processes.
So tell me, what is tilling?
Yeah, tilling's just straight disturbance of the earth, right? Mm-hmm. So it's a mechanical process that turns the soil levels. And considering that it's a very fine structure in that upper few inches of the soil, tilling will disrupt that. I like to think of it almost as a Godzilla type of action of just destroying the structures that are there. So minimizing that through harrowing, broad forking, cover cropping, these other techniques, it allows the structures to remain and to grow stronger. So that way, the mycelium, the microbes, the nematodes, the whole soil food web is intact and able to provide the nutrients to the plants that they wish.
Okay, looks like we've got an email from Chris. She says she has learned a lot of lessons over the years growing in her garden. Looks like the lessons are let nature show you the way, grow things that work in this climate, plant where there is not direct sun, and buy native plants. Do you agree?
I do.
Okay. And how about when it comes to the business side of things, Jedrick? Do consumers seem to be more attracted to crops that are grown using the methods you described?
I believe so. So through farmers markets, individuals, the customers are allowed to ask their farmers how they are growing. So they have pure transparency in the techniques utilized, which is a great thing. Plus our other customers, which are including restaurants and other institutions, including the school systems, hospitals, various other folks, they are interested in having a smaller carbon footprint and also having using their purchasing power to support the local producers. And so by us explaining how we are able to produce the food, it not only educates the customer, but it reassures them we're doing the best environmental practices.
So tell me about the young people that join your program. What do you think draws them to Grow the Grower?
That comes from a variety of different mechanisms, I feel. I feel there's a subset of people that are truly interested in just taking care of the earth and learning more about how to produce and increasing that soil health. I believe there are those that are interested in having healthy foods and having access to that and making sure that not only themselves and their families, but their neighbors have access to these foods. And myself fits in the category of doing it for the therapeutic benefits, for working with the earth, being in these natural systems, and feeling or being aware that we are part of a system that is much larger than ourselves.
And do many of the young people who join the program, do they go on to become successful farmers?
Yes. So this will be our third year of the program, and we have had 14 new agricultural operations start out of the graduates of the program. And then those are complemented by the many other farmers that we work with through the Agricultura Network. So the Agricultura Network is a South Valley farmer-owned cooperative that has 7 member farms, and we work with 35 other farms throughout the state. And so we are recognizing that we need additional farmers to meet the need for local product. And so with the new folks having the peer-to-peer learning with the farms that have been established for a while, it has helped grow the local food scene in that regard.
Okay. And how does your organization interact with other farmers in New Mexico?
Through multiple means. Our most basic way is to aggregate product. So we bring in product from those 42 farms at the South Valley Economic Development Center. We process, package, and then deliver it to customers. So we provide that service to those farms. We also provide technical assistance and other means of helping their operation, as well as creating interactions between themselves so they can learn from best practices, including the interaction between the trainee group at Grow the Growers and the established farms in the valley already.
So we're talking about traditional agriculture this morning. We'd like to hear from you. Can you tell us about your own gardening traditions? Did a family member teach you how to grow vegetables? Do you grow heirloom seeds? What kind? Give us a call, 277-5866. That's in the 505 area code, or email letstalk@kunm.org. Now, Reina Bentia is a farmer in Albuquerque's South Valley with, am I saying this right, Tsuya Farms?
Yeah.
Okay, good morning, Reina.
Good morning.
So what made you decide to become a farmer?
I think I've always been drawn to farming since I was in high school, and I wanted the opportunity to farm. I just never got the chance. So I started going to school for environmental science. And then I came across the program, the Grow the Grower program, a couple of years ago, and I just saw that as my way to start learning about farming and trying to develop my farming skills so that I could actually teach others as well.
So were there things you learned in the program that kind of surprised you about farming?
More so like the business aspect, I think, because I was never my mind wasn't geared toward actually owning a business or starting a business. I just knew that I wanted to grow food for people and start contributing to my community in Zuni through learning about agriculture. So that was probably the most thing that I've had to learn along the way.
Now, as you mentioned, you are a member of Zuni Pueblo, and your farm uses some techniques unique to indigenous Southwestern agriculture. What are they, and why do you use them?
So on my farm, I have a section dedicated to flood farming. So in that area, I'm going to plant native corn, some native squash, melons, and some chili, tomatillos, and amaranths. I also plant gourds. So those are more of our traditional crops from this region. And I also do waffle garden beds, which is a traditional farming technique from Zuni Pueblo.
So what does that, what is a waffle bed? How does that work?
The waffle beds are kind of engineered with the mud in the soil. It's they're kind of like clay adobe structures built for the garden so that it contains the water and the evaporation rates are less.
Okay, and when we say waffle gardening, that's kind of referring to the shape of those structures, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And so it kind of looks, you know, like squares.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you say that those crops that you're planting in that section are traditional to this area. What sort of advantages do they have when grown in the Southwest?
Well, so the seeds that I've come across are ones that are really drought tolerant. They do really well with minimal irrigation. So in my flood area and in the waffle beds, I try to mimic kind of those same conditions. And then those seeds, therefore, remain resilient to different types of pressures.
So speaking of seeds, heirloom seeds are something we're going to be talking about today. And those are varieties of crops that are open pollinated and often only found in the regions where they developed. Do you use any heirloom seeds on your farm?
Yes, I do have a good amount of heirlooms.
So can you tell me about some of those varieties?
So a lot of my seeds I received through the Native Seed Search. I'm doing a variety of different beans. The blue speckled tepary bean is one of my favorites. Scarlet runner beans. And I'm trying to do a Hopi purple corn this year. So, yeah, they're really different and really unique.
And have they, do they have sort of traits that have developed to adapt to the Southwestern climate?
Yeah, a lot of them, as I said, they are really drought tolerant. Mm-hmm. And they have a specific flavor to, even if it's different types of chilies, they all have their unique characteristics that the people that were farming selected for.
Okay. Are there some that you find sell better?
My traditional crops, I haven't really taken to market,
okay.
But I do hopefully this year we'll get a chance to bring those different varieties to market.
So what advice would you give to someone who was considering becoming a farmer?
I guess just be aware that it requires hard work. A lot of dedication and, just being open to different types of learning. And it's good to reach out to other young farmers and ask questions and, you know, to just go and volunteer at a farm and see how you like it and what types of needs there are in the food community.
Okay. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM. I'm Ty Bannerman. We want to hear from you. Are you a small farmer or a home gardener? What sort of tips do you have to share with aspiring growers? Does your family use heirloom seeds? How did your grandparents teach you to grow food? Let us know. Our number is 277-5866. That's 277-KUNM. We are also live tweeting the show, so send us your comments using the hashtag #LetsTalkNM. We are going to take a quick break.
UNM Children's Hospital cares for New Mexico's smallest and most vulnerable. Proud to bring health care to children for over 50 years and proud to support KUNM Public Radio.
The law firm of Rothstein Donatelli is committed to supporting KUNM, representing Native American tribes, people facing criminal charges, civil rights plaintiffs, and victims of sexual abuse. Info at rothsteinlaw.com.
I'm Maria Hinojosa, next time on Latino USA. Venezuelan women are known for their beauty and winning Miss Universe crowns, but now, because of the economic crisis in their country, they're selling their hair to get by. That's next time on Latino USA.
That's Latino USA, Monday mornings at 8 a.m. on KUNM.
Support for KUNM programming comes in part from our contributing listeners and by a grant from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Welcome back to Let's Talk New Mexico. We are talking about traditional agriculture and gardening today, and we are taking your calls, 277-5866, or email letstalk@kunm.org. We have Don on the phone from Taos. Hi, Don.
Good morning, Ty.
Good
Thanks
morning.
For having me on the show this morning.
Certainly. What would you like to add to the conversation this morning?
Well, I'm the executive director of Not Forgotten Outreach up in Taos, and we provide therapeutical recreation and farming activities to military families. With an AmeriCorps program that we created, VetCorps, we have been training military families in farming up in the Taos area to provide food to the school children of Taos County, working with the farm-to-school program that Micah Rosenberry has started up here with Farmhouse Cafe. And I want to say thank you to Mr. Jedrick for that wonderful site visit that we had of his facilities down there, and that man's got an impressive operation.
Excellent. So this is the second time we've mentioned therapeutic benefits to agriculture. Could you tell me a little bit more about that?
Oh, we can go all the way back to the British-American War when the U.S. and the British up in Canada started giving land to veterans to farm because it was therapeutic to be out in nature working with the ground. Oh, now they've got studies that the soil produces antidepressants inside of it, and so just digging in the dirt is helping with depression. We have seen extreme benefits from Vietnam veterans, from World War II veterans, from the current conflict in Iraq and Afghanistan. These veterans coming in and finding peace by being out in the field, raising the animals, and just enjoying nature.
Well, thank you so much for calling in, Don. We are talking about traditional agriculture this morning, and we want to hear from you. How do you handle garden pests without using harmful chemicals? Do you have a DIY method of fertilizing plants? Give us a call, 277-5866, or tweet using the hashtag #LetsTalkNewMexico. So, Jedrick, it sounds like Don is kind of referring to aspects of agriculture that people don't typically think about. For instance, therapeutic aspects. Are there other benefits to growing that go beyond just food?
Yes, I am extremely biased in this matter, but I believe food connects everything to everything, right? One of the main reasons why I got into food production is to appreciate the resources it takes to grow that food, primarily the land and the water. So in food production, you have an unquantifiable benefit by water absorption of that land to refill our aquifer, of reducing the heating in the area of the heat island effect, of air quality from the plants acting as that filter, wildlife refuge to ensure the prevention of extinction and proper migration, and many other things. As far as humans are concerned, the ability to have nutritious food and to receive the full spectrum of nutrients that the plants provide and the symbiotic relationship that's been established for thousands of years is hard to fully comprehend, right? And so some of our largest partners in our in our operations have been healthcare providers, because they recognize not only does it help prevent diabetes and chronic heart disease, but also alleviates anxieties and other issues that folks are facing.
So, Raina, do you find that there are benefits that go beyond simply the food value of what you produce as well?
Yes. We, as a indigenous community of where I'm from, hold deep respect for the land and for everything that it provides. So that kinship between land and self, it's really that bond that keeps us glued to where we come from and our communities, and how we kind of keep our communities strong is through that understanding that the land and all the animals and like the water and air, they're all important, and that we all have our duty to take care of it.
So joining us by phone now is Lorenzo Candelaria of Cornelio Candelaria Organics, which is also a small farm in the South Valley. Good morning, Lorenzo.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on.
Certainly. Now, Lorenzo, I understand that you are a seventh-generation farmer. Is that right?
Yes, that's true.
And what made you personally decide to continue this growing tradition in your family?
Well, it's a tradition, first of all, and then my respect for Mother Earth and what it means to us as a people, as a species, and what it does for us, the therapeutic elements that are involved in growing and consuming naturally grown food are very, very important to me, because we have a great debt and a great duty to Mother Earth to care for her and to understand that we are totally dependent on her for everything, for the clothes we wear, the houses we live in, the water we drink, the food we eat. And so those are the reasons that I dedicated my ambition and my work.
So Cornelio Candelaria Organics is obviously an organic farm. When did you make the decision to use organic methods?
I've always used them.
Really? Well, I have a question for you. When utilizing these organic methods, how do you deal with things like pests on your farm?
Well, in Spanish, there's a saying that says, when you plant, you take three seeds. Uno pa mí, uno pa vos, y otro para los animalitos de Dios. And translated, that's one for me, one for you, and one for the little animals and little creatures of God.
So how does that actually work in the field?
Well, sometimes you harvest a lot, and sometimes you don't, depending on the season, how the climate is. But I have found that to keep the balance in the ecosystem necessary to grow properly, that all of these creatures are necessary. So to eradicate one species from your garden is to put your ecosystem out of balance. So we try to adjust it that way.
Now, you also offer training and classes to young people who are interested in agriculture. Why do you think that that's important?
They're our future. The average age of the farmer today is about my age, you know, in their 60s and 70s. So the instruction for children not only teaches them the production of food, but it also teaches them the understanding of our dependency on Mother Earth and our duty to maintain its integrity.
Now, when you were learning to farm, did you learn any lessons from your own family about how to go about it?
Everything that I know is handed down. No, I'm seventh generation, and we've been farming since the 1600s here in the valley. So the knowledge that I have of the land that I work is pretty intense. I like to tell people that I've kicked every rock on the farm at least twice.
So acequia irrigation, which uses a community water supply transported by canal, has been a major part of New Mexico farming for hundreds of years. I understand that on your farm, you combine traditional acequia use and modern low water techniques like drip irrigation. How do you choose when to use each technique, and what advantages does each provide?
It depends on the crop that I'm growing. Corn normally doesn't do very well under drip, so I flood irrigate that. And because of my cultivation methods, chili is also part of the flood irrigation system. Things like lettuce and root crops and all of the leafy greens grow very well under drip.
Now we are go right ahead.
So I try to understand what part of the land I'm using for any particular crop, and adjust the irrigation system to the crop and to the part of the soil that I'm using for that crop.
Okay, well, we are talking about traditional agriculture this morning. We want to hear from you. Are you a farmer or a gardener? What sort of methods do you use? Where did you learn them? And what have you always wanted to try in your gardens or fields? Call us now at 277-5866 or tweet to us using the hashtag #LetsTalkNM. So I wanted to ask the panel about what sort of challenges have you encountered in your farming experience? What has made it What obstacles did you face that you were perhaps unexpected, and what did you do about them? Okay, Raina?
Maybe not unexpected, but last year I had a really bad problem with squash bugs and these beetles called harlequin beetles and bagrata beetles. So they really attacked a lot of my greens, arugula, radishes, sunflowers, you know, and anything you could imagine, they were all over. So, and also I didn't have any squash because they just took everything out. So that was one of my main challenges last year.
So you weren't able to prevent them from infesting. It sounds like you simply accept that they took it?
Yeah, now I do, but I think for this coming season, yeah, I have to try just different techniques to kind of limit those types of pests.
Now, as someone, I have faced the devastation of squash bugs before, and I would love to know what you guys do to prevent them.
A lot of it is just early picking of the eggs that are on the underside of the leaves mostly. So we go through each row and we just pick them off under every leaf, and kind of helps for a bit. And there's probably other methods, but that's probably the best way to handle them at the beginning.
How about you, Lorenzo? Do you have any advice for dealing with squash bugs particularly?
Squash them is the first thing. Because they are squash bugs after all.
Yeah, poetic.
I find that if I do two plantings of squash, if I plant very early, like in April, to give the bug its life cycle,
mm-hmm.
and then replant again in June, that it helps some. It doesn't eradicate the bug or anything, but it does slow it down.
So what? I have heard that there's a way that you can use boards to take care of them. Have you guys ever used this technique?
Yes,
I've tried it. It works. It works somewhat, but I find that just going in and hunting the little bug down and squashing it is the safest way to do it.
Okay, and Jedrick, you said you've used it as well. Can you tell us about that technique and how it works and does it work?
So it does work as a measure to reduce the number of adults. What you do is you put a 2x4 board in the walkway, raised up with bricks or other blocks of wood. In the heat of the day, the bugs will go to the underside of the board in order to get shading. Then you can take that board and hit it across the ground to kill multiple of them at one time. But it does not substitute the diligence of going out there and removing the eggs as well. So it is understanding the bug's life cycle, understanding when and where to get the eggs and the adults, and staying on top of it, and choosing if you want to dedicate time to maintain that bug and maintain that plant to get the harvest. There is, without really harmful chemicals that do have long-lasting effects on the micro ecosystem and your soil, there are always going to be a presence of what folks will consider pests. And so it's maintaining that, keeping the numbers down, and balancing it out with the amount of effort versus the harvest you're trying to get out of it.
Okay. Now, going back to the idea of obstacles and unexpected challenges, what about beyond the actual growing of the crops? Have there been economic challenges to making a living as a farmer? Raina?
Yeah, I think so. The reason I went into farming really wasn't to make money, but obviously it is helpful, you know, just day to day. And planning ahead was one of the things that I kind of saw as a challenge, you know, because farming season is during a specific time. So, you know, during the winter months and early spring months is kind of when financial kind of obstacles occur.
And how do you deal with those?
Just try to find different types of jobs. I do a lot of kind of more hobby stuff, and that kind of helps pay for certain things. But
and Lorenzo, as someone who has been farming for many years, can you tell us about how the market has changed over that time and how you have adapted?
Well, I think the market has pretty much always been the same way that it is. I think the benefits of organic certification the benefits are debatable, but I think that we just have to keep plugging away at it and looking to see how we change the market to be able to reap the profits that we're lacking. No, we have a market that is supplied by producers out of state and producers that are commercial producers. And that keeps our market down.
And can you tell me a little bit about organic certification? You say the benefits are debatable. That's obviously a fairly new aspect to farming.
Well, because I've always farmed organically, I've never used chemicals or commercial fertilizers on my soil. Organic certification to me, or at least for me, is not it's not an issue because I've always been organic. We used to call it food.
I see. Okay. Are you organic certified, Raina?
No, I'm not, but I do practice organic.
Okay. So it costs money to get certified. Is that what I understand? Okay. How does that process work, Jedrick?
So you have to find an approved auditing or inspector entity. NMSU is an inspector, and then there's a large entity out of California and another one out of Oregon that does it. They come in, reassure that you have a plan that's following the organic practices and that you are following it and you have the records to do that. Our farms inside the Agricultura Network and with Grow the Growers follow all organic practices at a minimum. We ask our farms to go above and beyond any of those requirements, but we do not require certification. So it is to have a third party to verify to the customer that you have practiced that. We recommend that our customers talk to our farmers so that way they get the verification firsthand from our farmers on what methods they use.
Thank you for joining us today for Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM. We are talking about agriculture in New Mexico and how traditional methods still have an important role to play in our present-day efforts towards sustainability. We will be back in a minute.
Support comes from UNM's Institute for Medieval Studies with its spring lecture series Presenting the Medieval World, March 25th through the 28th. Info at ims.unm.edu or 277-2252.
KUNM is gearing up for our spring fundraiser in March, and we're looking for businesses and individuals who can offer a challenge grant during the fundraiser. When you offer to match the gifts of KUNM donors during the fundraiser, the phones light up. They ring and ring and ring until we meet our goals, and that's exactly what we need. So if you're planning to give $500 or more and would like to double your support, please make it a challenge grant. Call 277-8006. That's 277-8006.
Each week, New Dimensions explores the social, political, scientific, environmental, and spiritual frontiers with some of today's foremost social innovators, thinkers, scientists, and creative artists.
Hello, I'm Dr. Elson Haas, author of Staying Healthy with New Medicine. Next time on New Dimensions, I'll be talking about the five keys to staying healthy.
Saturday mornings at 6 on KUNM.
This is Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Ty Bannerman. We are talking about traditional agriculture, and we want to hear from you. Do you have any great tips for gardening that your family passed down to you? Give us a call at 277-5866 or tweet using the hashtag #LetsTalkNM. And now I'd like to go to Jose, who is calling from the South Valley in Albuquerque. Hi, Jose.
Hey, good morning, everybody, and thank you for having me on the line. My name is Jose Luis Ortiz, and I'm originally from Peñasco, New Mexico, and I currently farm in the South Valley of Albuquerque and in Acoma Pueblo with some close friends and as well in Jemez Pueblo. And I just wanted to touch on a few things because this is a really important topic. You know, traditional farming has kept this region alive for thousands of years. And you know, we talk about this often about how, you know, just the last 50 years alone of agro farming or business farming, conventional farming, how it's destroyed thousands of years of agricultural infrastructure and what that has done to the traditional communities of this region. It's really decimated and desecrated culture, land base, and how we view water as a whole. You know, and two, certification processes, how that destroys the integrity of traditional farming methods. Lawrence touched on it a little bit. You know, traditional farmers, we've always grown organic, and I always like to say we're beyond organic, we're beyond biodynamic, we're spiritual farmers. We're farmers that have a relationship with the land, relationship with the environment. And I think that when we start talking about farming on that level, what we're really talking about is true viability and sustainability of the land. But we also can't forget that there's also a history and experience of this region as it pertains to agriculture and how we have related with one another. I feel and you know, there's a lot of new age history being talked about, and there's a lot of erasure happening to land-based communities. The Genízaro community is always forgotten in the narrative. There's this popular, you know, Pueblo narrative of indigenous First Nations folks. And I think that it's really important that as we look at where our seeds come from and who maintains seed strength, you know, we don't find that solely within the First Nations federally recognized tribes. We find that throughout New Mexico, Acequia communities. We find that in land-based communities in southern New Mexico and in tribal communities and in First Nations recognized communities. And those really are the populations of folks who are maintaining the knowledge of the land and the seeds and how to cultivate and how to practice, you know, growing methods. And then we also have to move forward with the times. Lawrence talked about that also, the drip irrigation, You know, Jedrick talked a little bit about how we, you know, control squash bugs. These are tools and skills that we need to continue to learn and continue to move forward with. At the same time, the really difficult task of maintaining traditional practices of seed saving and farming, and also working collectively with one another. How do we develop markets? How do we, you know, really affect how our schools, our governments, our communities are looking at food, how our hospitals and the healthcare system are looking at food, how the education system is looking at food. You know, these are topics I feel are probably at the forefront of the main issues of mental health, physical health, and the challenges that our country, our region, our globe is facing right now. So I just wanted to touch a little bit on that and how important it is that we stand together to, you know, really support local food movements. And I want to recommend to everybody listening, as well as my colleagues that are on the phone with us today, to you know, encourage them to go out and support a farmer, volunteer, get involved in the local food movement, get to know your farmer, you know, study more about what food is and the impact of food on our bodies, learn about glyphosate and GMOs. And once you start to peel back the layers of the misinformation that's provided by the corporate businesses, you'll start to find that our families are facing heavy-duty health disparities as a result of these chemicals and a result of high fructose corn syrup and heavy enriched food, bleached and enriched foods and flours. So I don't want to take more of the time, but I really believe that this is probably one of the greatest topics of our time. And if we don't take this topic seriously, we're going to see, hey, extreme health impacts and health disparities, especially amongst our First Nations, our Indigenous, and our people of color communities. And it's already being seen. It's very clear in our families. Thank you.
Thank you, Jose. And Jedrick, I'd like to ask you a question following on Jose. Where should people go to learn more about the benefits of traditional and small-scale farming?
Yes. And thank you, Jose Luis. I greatly appreciate your comments and all the other folks. I would recommend to directly speak to the farmers first and foremost. There's a wonderful opportunity at farmers markets that occur throughout the state. You can go to the New Mexico Farmers Market Association website, which is farmersmarketsnm.org, to find a market in your area. Or you can also look for farm stands, or you can just, as you're driving through your neighborhood, see where folks are producing food. And most likely, the farmer will be happy to speak with you. So talking to those folks on that front line, as mentioned, and then also the organizations that have been focused around food. So Agriculture Network has one, American Friends Service Committee, others throughout the state, the SECU Association, the Food and Ag Policy Council. There's a whole plethora of organizations out there focused on it. Also the healthcare providers, Presbyterian, First Choice, others. A lot of people are focusing on this at the moment. So I feel engaging with folks will help provide those connections to find your way to, whether it's to buy food, to work the field, to learn how to grow food for yourself, which is arguably one of the most powerful things you can do in a pursuit of self-determination. But also, there's a plethora of resources online and folks growing food all around the world. So there is no shortage of resources or individuals or organizations. So reach out, see where the universe takes you, and follow those connections.
Now, Reyna, Jose mentioned concerns going from health disparities to the health of the globe. Are those things that you consider as you're out there working in the field?
Yeah, that's probably one of my main reasons also that I went into farming, because in my community I saw a lack of people farming, a lack of young people farming, and that knowledge that the older generation had with all the different types of traditional farming was being lost. So I found that through farming I've come across the different types of kind of a lack of different things in my community that we never used to have. We never used to be unhealthy. So that's one of the main reasons that I kind of wanted to bring agriculture back to my community, or just have that interest into what we always used to do, because with that disconnection between the land, we started utilizing different types of food sources, which were not particularly healthy for us.
Now, do you feel that there are specific benefits to young people in your community going into agriculture?
Yes, I do. I think that just going out there and working and knowing that you're doing something with your hands is kind of a good just way to live. You know, you have the opportunity to provide for yourself and your family, and you get that sense of just knowing that you've accomplished something every day.
Okay, now I'd like to bring Britta Sauer into the conversation. She is a librarian with Santa Fe Public Libraries, which is starting a seed library program. Good morning, Britta.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Now, a seed library is basically a way of crowdsourcing the first steps of agriculture by making seeds freely available to interested farmers and gardeners and then asking them to return harvested seeds after the growing season is over. Where did this idea come from, Britta?
This is sort of been something that's been bubbling up for probably the past 10-15 years. I myself got my inspiration from the Pima County Public Library, Seed Library. They have a really dynamic and exciting seed program there. I started a seed library in Albuquerque and then wanted to come up here and start one up here because it's an exciting way to, I think, engage the community and build the community around seeds and gardening.
And how are the seeds that you have available different from those that a grower or farmer would purchase at, say, Walmart or a local nursery?
Well, yeah, right now, since we are a newer project, a lot of our seeds actually come from seed companies that specialize in heirloom and open pollinated seeds. We do have some donations from the community right now, but the hope is that as this project moves forward, we'll start to have a collection of seeds that have grown up in the community and actually reflects the community. So it will have open pollinated seeds that have sort of been selected for the Santa Fe area.
Okay, and we are talking about traditional agriculture today. Have you ever used traditional techniques of water saving like waffle gardening or Ollas? We would love to hear from you. Give us a call at 277-5866. That is in the 505 area code, or email letstalk@kunm.org. Now, I'd like to go to Margaret on the phone from Albuquerque, who has a comment about seed saving. Hi, Margaret.
Hi. I just wanted to, first of all, say thank you for giving time to this topic and allowing all the callers and your panel people to share their knowledge, because it's so important for people to understand where their food comes from and how the systems work around what happens with their food so that they can have some input and take control of what's going on with those systems. And so I want to offer some information as a follow-up to Jose's comments and to the person from the seed library in Santa Fe's information that would be of interest and useful for anybody listening to this program who supports independent, organic, traditional and small-scale farmers, a way that they can take action to help support that system. In this year's legislation, some language was inserted into a bill called HB2, which would give sole seed regulation control to the New Mexico Department of Agriculture. In that case, it would remove the ability from city, county, and local tribal entities to have the ability to control their own seed sovereignty and to be able to do things like create genetically engineered free zones, GE free zones, or, for example, the seed library the woman was just talking about in Santa Fe. You know, the New Mexico Department of Agriculture could say, hey, seed libraries are not allowed, because they would have the sole regulation control of seeds. So the only way to avoid that, since this bill did already pass, is to contact the governor's office at 476-2200, area code 505, and ask the governor to please line item veto any language in the bill HB2 that would limit any local or tribal capacity to maintain seed sovereignty. That's a really important action that people could take very easily by calling the governor's office at 476-2200 and asking her to get rid of any language in that HB2 bill that limits tribal capacity or local capacity to maintain seed sovereignty. Because if the seed regulation is solely under the control of the New Mexico Department of Agriculture, then they may be very susceptible to corporations such as Monsanto influencing what their seed regulation becomes. So okay. I want people to have the ability to take action against that.
All right. Thank you, Margaret. And I'd like to go back to Britta. Britta, do you have any thoughts on what Margaret was saying?
No, that's super important. I thank her for bringing that up. Seed libraries and, you know, kind of what she said, that we're all sort of working at a much smaller local level. And to keep those projects going, we need to have, the ability to do that, as she said, without other forces coming in to sort of dictate how we share our seeds, which are sort of part of the community to begin with. They're part of our cultural history, and we shouldn't have that dictated by larger companies.
Okay, and so can you tell me, like, how is this process of the seed library, how will that help preserve rare varieties of crops for future generations?
Our hope is to sort of start the conversation around seed saving and seed stewardship to give some of the resources needed to do that. But what we want to do is sort of maintain a really robust and diverse supply of seeds for our region and encourage people, when they're growing those seeds, out to select for traits that do well in our pretty special and sometimes difficult growing environment. So it's really important that we're sort of all of us doing that work at a really local level.
So, Jedrick, I understand you had something to mention here.
Yeah, I just want to ensure folks that we're living in very exciting times, even though there are several obstacles ahead. Where we are blessed because we have such a rich culture and tradition here, as well as so many folks interested in continuing agriculture. Agricultura Network has been saying a national model. Bernalillo County is the only local government sponsoring a farmer training program and putting resources into training new farmers, recognizing that. And I believe the resiliency that comes from the high desert plains is what helped our current civilization and will help take us to that next step.
Okay, I want to very quickly go to Eunice, who is calling from the Monsanto Mountains. Eunice, you have a squash bug solution. We will have to be very quick as we're coming up at the end of the hour.
Okay, well, it took me years to learn this, but what is effective is to take the vines of the wild gourds that are small, round gourds, and they grow all over New Mexico. And they stink. They stink terrible. So you really have to protect yourself from that and probably wear gloves. But you take those vines and you wind them amongst your squash vines, and it repels the squash bugs.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much. That is all the time that we have today. Thank you so much to everyone who called in to share your thoughts. Thanks so much to our guests. The conversation does not have to end here. You can share your thoughts by commenting on KUNM.org or email letstalk@KUNM.org. If you missed part of the show, stream it online or subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. I am Ty Bannerman. Our engineer is Marino Spencer. Kaveh Movahed screened your calls, and Celia Rainey live tweeted the show. Elaine Baumgartel is our executive producer. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM.